From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Conversation with Jason Beal. We talk about regulation and the direction of management technologies into the future. This is a bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Yeah, we've known one another a long time. So, you know, I think it dates back to my MSP days and you two or three business roles back. But for those that may not know, what are you up to now?
So still based in Southern California. I've been back in the United States for 3 years after spending about 8 years in Europe. And I'm the Senior Vice President of Global Channels and Partner Ecosystems for AvePoint. I've been here about a year now and helping the company, you know, re-architect its go-to-market and pivoting hard towards, you know, indirect and partner co-selling.
Gotcha. So I want to kind of wander through two areas that I think you've been thinking about and get your take on these. And the first is that I want to give you an opportunity to kind of weigh on some of the things that we're seeing in regulation. There's a bunch of stuff moving through Congress right now, right? Like there's a bunch of different bills, and they have things around disclosure, or they've got things around the way remediation vulnerabilities should work and definitions of managed services, like all of these things. What's your take on some of these bills that are moving through, or the bills as a general trend?
I mean, I think that the leadership from the federal government is critical. It's helpful. A lot of this addresses, you know, problems that the industry itself has been trying to solve for decades. And the arguments, right, that we've been making to businesses, universities, governments for a long time. But the leadership from the federal government with the five different cybersecurity bills passed through the House in July provides tremendous support. And by the way, provides a lot of funding, right? So there's for instance, the State and Local Cybersecurity Improvement Act. It's $500 million grant, right, for state, local businesses to help erect their digital barriers to cyber attacks. A lot of it is leadership around the critical infrastructure and departments of energy. So leadership, putting us at the forefront, putting attention to it is always helpful. And I also think back to, what was it, a couple months ago in June, where the Biden administration had put out a memo. And again, it was, these are things, Dave, that, you know, you and I and all of our friends in the industry have been working on for a long time, right? They gave these five best practices around backing up your data offline and patching systems properly and doing pen testing and having instant response systems and segmenting networks. We've all been doing those and advocating those things. But again, leadership from the federal government, documentation, communication is only going to help compel businesses and universities and the government itself to pay more attention and to spend more.
We've been serving regulated industries, but are we moving towards being a regulated industry ourselves formally? Is that where you think this is going? And what does that mean for us?
I think certainly there will be more formal and accountabilities for the IT providers, be them an ISV like an AvePoint and the, let's say, the quality, right, of our software and of our code, right? We can think, without naming names, back to just a few recent examples where the ISVs themselves have had vulnerabilities exposed and then have unfortunately impacted their partners and their clients. Certainly service providers and cloud service providers, I think, will have more accountability, more formal accountabilities on the delivery of their technology down to the end customer. And then, yeah, either through, you know, with managed service providers, either through their contractual agreements with their end customers, whether it's, you know, their responsibilities for things like cyber insurance, whether it's their responsibilities under GDPR to provide, quote unquote, state-of-the-art technology and to make, quote unquote, best efforts, right, to protect customer data and privacy. I think, yeah, more and more of the industry itself will have more formal accountabilities.
Yeah, and you're, I mean, you're exactly right. And I don't think it's necessary to name names because it's almost interchangeable. Like that, the fact that several have happened high profile in the IT community, the name is a little less relevant because I could swap that out. Right? It was just, they were the ones that got hit.
Yes.
That's not the important detail. The important detail is that the risk of those channels. So as an ISV, how much do you think about where the responsibility for risk management, like what is your portion of that supply chain risk versus what the provider does? Because it's not 100% on either side. It's not all them. It's not all you. Yeah. What's the bit that you think the ISV needs to own and be, you know, world class at doing?
Probably two parts to the, you know, to answer that question. One is just this, you've heard the term, these shared security responsibility models, whether it's, you know, public cloud shared security responsibility model, or whether it's a shared security responsibility that Microsoft itself has for, you know, its platform and its products. An ISV like AvePoint is the same, right? Kind of, we're going to be responsible for the quality of the application, some of the plumbing, some of the hosting of it, the SaaS environments, redundancy, the data center. And then our downstream constituents, be them the partners or the end users, will also have certain responsibilities for the application, how they're using it, the governance, the you know, backing it up, policies, permissions, data loss. So there will certainly be a shared responsibility. And then I think secondly, like in the industry, because we're in the industry, we even have more of a responsibility to protect our reputations so that we're not being breached, right? So, you know, whether you're a cybersecurity company, boy, you better not be hacked. If we're a company that's doing data management and backup, boy, we better not lose the data or make it unmanageable. So I think in both respects, that we have to pay attention.
So I want to let me offer a premise then. And let's do this a little bit more forward thinking in terms of the way that the market might be going. I think technology management of the future is around policy compliance when accessing cloud resources. I think that that's the way the model is going, away from the idea of much more endpoint focused management to this idea of making sure that the business sets what's allowed, particularly access to data, and the IT systems enforce that rather than a try and control everything approach.
Yeah.
What's your take on that premise?
So you're right, because organizations we're struggling to find this balance between cybersecurity, cyber resilience, and then end user productivity and agility and access to all that information and data in this digital world, right? So how do you strike that balance? How do you empower at the same time protect? I always have these kind of two mental images, right, where I like to describe when we talk around this cyber resilience is, if we look at kind of the classic GRC, governance, risk, and compliance side of the house, right, then you conjure up mental mnemonics of, you know, people with, you know, clipboards and big filing cabinets and kind of that old kind of records management and paper and heavy on audit side of the house that really was never driven out of IT and certainly never like a historical part of the MSSP or MSP business model. But GRC was critical, but again, think paper and records and audit. And then on the other side, you had a lot of MSPs that grew up in that universe where you talked about desktop management, server management, network, some applications, and eventually SaaS applications. Well, certainly today we are seeing this convergence of those two sides of the house, right? You're seeing GRC be much more an application and IT-driven challenge. And you're seeing MSPs now take on more and more of this opportunity, this responsibility around governance, right? If you would have asked an MSP 10 years ago or asked 100 MSPs, how many of you do like governance and user policies and permissions and compliance and risk management? Maybe there would have been less than 10%. Well, they've been now pulled into this world because it's now a key part of an overall cyber resilience or cybersecurity strategy. So the coming together of these two worlds is putting more of an onus on the managed service providers to do that, to do governance, to do compliance, and help their customers in that way.
So you're talking to a lot of partners and you're thinking a lot about this IT cloud management control and protection space. What are the list of requirements you've identified that are kind of the important bits for IT providers in this cloud management and control space?
So similar to kind of historically where you're looking at when you're helping a business look it up, your upstream and your downstream constituents and what access that they may need to your systems and data, and making sure that you can provide the right level of access for external constituents in order to help service your and expand your market. I think that at the same time, we have to look then also at what is your specific industry or vertical market, because there are a myriad of different compliance and regulatory requirements for individual industries, and there too, managed service providers work with their customers to understand what those requirements are and then to address those. And then I think the third vector would be around geography, right? I.e. the kind of individual country or region requirements. Where they are in the world, for which governments, they're governed by, and there also will be a new host of challenges and requirements that the IT providers and the MSPs will need to address. So I think those three vectors are critical when trying to help an end customer with their cloud management and cloud access and cybersecurity strategies.
Gotcha. So then I'm going to ask you to play investor for a second, right? So you've been asked by an investment group to go build an IT services company. As a guy who's spent a lot of time thinking about this, what would you build? What would it look like?
I still firmly value and believe in that role of the local trusted advisor, right? As much as that, as we've talked about that term in the last few decades, and as sophisticated as technology is and being able to do remote delivery and having data centers all around the world, and I still believe in that local trusted advisor working with the business, understanding what they need to do, providing a technology roadmap, providing consultancy services, implementation. So I would start from there. Businesses, schools, governments still have needs. They still are not going to be the experts. Technology is incredibly complex. You need to be incredibly specialized and have incredibly competent, human resources to help your customers solve IT challenges. So I would start there. Then second is that more and more when I talk to partners, there is this business model that's created around this, what they call this total ecosystem economic opportunity, more so than the resale of the technology, either hardware or software. In fact, Dave, I talked to many partners now who will say, we're non-transactional. I'll say, what does that mean? We're non-transactional. We don't want to resell even a software license, let alone a piece of hardware. But our business model is around the technology. How do we co-create IP? How do we provide managed services, professional services, consulting services? How do we drive integration? So that business model where you're not dependent on any particular vendor's partner program or what the discount is that they're offering or what the list price of something is, but I'm going to create a lot of value around the technology is something that I would have in mind if I was going to be pitching an MSP or pitching an investor to start up an MSP business.
I love that answer, by the way, because you're thinking and mine are a lot alike. I'm going to ask a little bit specific, Does that look a lot like a consulting business? Is the because it sounds like the main thing you're pitching is the advice is the product, right? The guidance is the product. Is that a consulting business that you're proposing?
It's a part of consulting. So you need to earn, right, the trust, the respect, the loyalty of an end customer through the consultancy, your expertise, again, that human capital. But as we know, consultancy businesses, a lot of professional service businesses just aren't scalable, right? Your ability to scale is directly tied in many cases to labor hours, right? And so if I start a business, I'm always looking at destination planning, right? Where do we want to take the business? And how do you increase a multiple? You're not going to get the highest multiple from consulting, from one-time services revenue. For a while, the holy grail was to try to get the entire business towards monthly recurring. I think in practicality, certainly we've seen this with partners at AvePoint. We've talked to many of my peers. And there's this hybrid model where a large portion, 40 to 60%, can be monthly recurring. But you don't want to walk away from opportunities. In our case, migration is a one-time service, and you want to help customers through migration, make sure they're doing all the proper planning, due diligence, use it right. One-time project, take the one-time project. Have great monthly recurring. If you're going to have vendors that are going to help give you influencer fees and referral fees, take them, right? You want to have – so there's just – nowadays, partners need to be agile, create monthly recurring revenue, but find other ways, again, to monetize what you do well. And ultimately, that can drive the right multiple.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes a ton of sense. So last question then, as we're recording this, kind of coming up on the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday, we're thinking about next year. As you look to 2022, what are you on the lookout for? What's the big thing that you think is kind of a prediction or a direction for next year?
You know, managed service providers have an opportunity, but there's an immediate need, right, for them to work with their customers on kind of not what we call not just backing up, but buttoning up these digital collaboration environments. So this, I load the sound like an AvePoint commercial and talk about our digital collaboration platform, but feedback that we're getting from partner conversations, from survey data, is that in this rush to move employees, students, government workers onto these collaborations applications during COVID, get the employees and students, you know, productive again, we jumped, right? We missed some of that proper, you know, due diligence, planning, user training, user guides. And they're on, and uh-oh, they're vulnerable. We keep hearing that we went back in now to our end customer environments, and there's vulnerability. We need to button these things up. So I think that's an opportunity on 2022. We've kind of gotten through the storm here. Businesses are back up and running. Students are either online or in person again. Now let's go back and do that proper amount of you know, governance work and user policies and admins and records management and data classifications and all. Let's do all that stuff again now to make sure that we're reducing the number of vulnerabilities and protecting against ransomware and other cyber attacks.
Gotcha. Well, that'll give us something to work on for next year. Jason, thanks for joining me today.
Dave, again, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
When it comes to delivering cybersecurity services to your client, there's a lot to consider, and even more at stake. Firewalls and antivirus don't provide enough protection, and adding more tools to an already complex tech stack is expensive and difficult to manage. The Field Effect Partner Momentum Program and their award-winning security portfolio solves these issues by enabling MSPs to deliver complete cybersecurity protection, unlock new revenue streams, simplify operations, and stand out from the competition. Learn more and connect with the Field Effect team today by visiting fieldeffect.com/MSP Radio. Thanks for listening to this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. I'll talk to you again tomorrow. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio. Want to reach our listeners? MSPradio.com/engage.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.